Welcome, welcome. You're listening to our podcast, Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. My name is Mark. I'm a registered massage therapist, registered kinesiologist here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We've got a real cool guest sitting on the other side of our Zoom, a repeat guest, and I'm happy to have this happen again. This is good times. This is good times, and this is about something that I think deserves to be heard, and I think some attention needs to be brought to it. So let's do this again to find out what's going on.
Let's do this again. Hey, everyone. It's Amanda, and we have Devana back on our podcast. She is the face behind 419 Education. She teaches continuing education courses, and she is the, I don't know, what do we call you? Founder, CEO, director, all the things, president,
all the things.
Queen of the first ever, the queen of the first ever Black Massage Therapist Conference that's coming up this fall. October 14th is the date. And we had her on, I think it was back in March, if we're all remembering correctly. Earlier in the stages of promoting the conference and getting the word out there. And we had her on with Ashley, and they were just telling us about what was going to be happening in the fall. And we wanted to have her back to see how the progress was going. We know that she's been responding to a lot of questions, and there's
that
some confusion.
February.
Oh,
February 10th is when we put that out.
Okay. So it was February that we talked last time. So it's been a while. So we're just doing a follow-up, a catch-up, and seeing how things are going. So Devana, thanks for coming back and hanging out with us.
Thank you for having me back. Hey, guys.
Hey. So let's, for anyone who didn't hear your first episode with Ashley, can we start with just a quick intro about you again, and then tell us about the conference, what's going to be taking place for anybody who didn't hear that first episode, and yeah, then we'll just get into some follow-ups.
Because it's got what has it had, like 6 months to brew and flour and all that kind of stuff. So I want to hear how it's been progressing.
Yeah.
All right. So hi everyone. My name is Devana Willis. I currently live in Phoenix, Arizona, born and raised in the Bronx, New York, and I am a certified athletic trainer. So if you don't know what that is the people who assist athletes with injuries, and we're like the physical therapist for the athletes, and I'm also a licensed massage therapist. At this point, I have both for about 20 years. So I've been doing this for a minute. And so currently I am a CE provider. I'm on the medical side of things. So I teach lymphatic drainage massage, sports massage, posture awareness, stretch therapy, and also business, because I did have a wellness center for 10 years here in Arizona. And so now I am a founder of a conference that was not in the business plan for 419. And that's just something God told me I needed to do. And I'm doing it. It all started from the social unrest we had here in the States with the George Floyd back in June of 2020. Mm-hmm. I was feeling a certain way. And my office was, is in Gilbert, Arizona, predominantly a Mormon town. And now it's getting a little bit more color, but predominantly white and Mormon. And so I was known for a while as the Black massage therapist. And so my clients were very gracious and very sweet, and was asked me if I needed anything, because there was a lot of things going on internally as well as nationally. And I was looking for an outlet. I was looking for someone to speak to who may be feeling the same way I was feeling. And there was no other like groups out there. There's a lot of Facebook groups for massage therapists, but there was nothing for Black massage therapists that I found at the time. And so I developed a group, and now that was June of 2020. Now we have over 1,000 people in the group, from students as well as LMTs. Nationally, internationally, we have some Canadians, we have some people from Africa, we have people from the Caribbean. And so, yeah. So because of the group, there was an outcry. We need to get together. We need to get together. We need to get together. And I was like, whoever was saying it, I was like, well, go ahead, organize it.
Sure, let's do that.
Yeah, go ahead, start it up. And then, you know, we was trying to have a meeting, and I got ghosted a couple of times. Or then somebody else was like, we should get together. And I was like, why don't you two meet and let me know what happens? And then they got ghosted as well. And God was like, it's for you to do it. And so here I am. I asked Ashley to help me because she did MC Banquets 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I attended and she did a fantastic job. It's an award ceremony for massage therapists. And it was fantastic. And I was like, well, you already did an event. And I need your insight and help. And would you help me out? And there we go. And that's how it started.
Well, last we talked to you, as I said, it was in the winter and you guys were kind of just getting started and gaining sponsorship and all of that stuff. So before we get into, you know, some of the serious talks, how are things going? Are people getting excited? Are the presenters pumped up? Like, tell me where we're at now in August.
Yes. Yeah, so yes, we are excited. We just actually had a Facebook Live last night about the conference, talking to people about it, more so about it, what's happening, what's going to, you know, the food, DJs, photographer, videographer, headshots, raffle prizes, awards. So yes, the presenters are excited. We have halfway. My goal is between 80 and 100. So we're halfway there of attendees. We have a few students who's also attending. So we have people who applied for business grants. So we do have a winner for that. We already know who that's going to be. We have students who apply for the student grants. And let me go back a little bit. The business grant, basically, you had to fill out a little application about your business, why you would get funded. They got funded. They will be getting funded $1,500 for their business. But we wouldn't be able to do that without sponsorship. So we had someone sponsor that. And that was Massage Insurance Plus that sponsored that business grant.
Massage Meg Insurance Plus?
Yes.
Nice.
Isn't that amazing? So they are one of our greatest sponsors. They're also doing a swag bag sponsor. And then we also had sponsorship for MLEX study guides and to pay for the students to take the MLEX. And that was from FSMTB. And ABMP, and also two massage schools, one in Asheville, North Carolina, and another palpation in, I think it's in Kentucky, and then another company in North Carolina sponsored students grant. So it's been great. We had all the major players in the industry get behind us. ABMP is our premier sponsor. AMTA is our premier sponsor. They're also sponsoring the swag, the tote bag itself for the swag items. Mm-hmm. We have, and I already told you about FSTMB and Massage Magazine. I've been in there. I've been on ABMP's blog and magazine. And so I am very happy about the support, the industry as a whole. This is needed.
Nice.
And so I'm excited about that.
I really love hearing all the positive stuff first, because obviously, you know, there has also been some negative, but I don't want to get into that yet. I just want to, you know, just now at the end of your statement, you said that all the major players are behind you because they know this was needed. I know we've already discussed this before, Devana, but can you tell our audience again why this is so important and why this is needed and why people are getting behind you and the sponsors are getting behind you, and especially things like the business grant and those types of things. Why did you guys decide to include this in your first conference?
Absolutely. So it's needed because representation matters. And majority of massage schools, they either don't have any other people of color in administration or diversity in the student population. So when we started welcoming students in the massage groups, one of the biggest complaints and, you know, hardships was that they were the only one in the whole entire school, whether it was administration or student. And so they didn't have anybody else who they can relate to, because there is different struggles. And some teachers are not as kind as others. Let's just put it that way, because of their race, right? And so those were some of the discriminations they were getting in the schools. And then on just an everyday occurrence, right? I think I told you guys, it took me about 4 or 5 years to put my face on my website because of the tone and where I was, being a Black person, the representation wasn't there. So I was, the representation that they saw was my Google and at the time Yelp reviews. Right. And so, but when they would see me, it was a look of, oh, like a look of shock, a look of, I don't know if I want to get massaged by this person. So, you know, after a while, people will, if they did continue with the massage service, they stayed because it was great. And, you know, myself and my team knew what they were doing. But, you know, you have that. You have people say, I've had in the group, I've seen posts that said people would say, I don't want a Black therapist. I want a white therapist. Yeah. Just like sometimes, you know, the sex discrimination. I don't want a male therapist. I want a female therapist. And they would say that right in front of the therapist's face, looking at them like, I don't want you touching me. Right. And so that happens. You know, racism still exists. And it is a fact. We're less than, they're about 8% in the industry, at least in the States. Right. 70% is white women in the industry. And so statistics shows it's needed. Representation matters. You need to come together and celebrate each other.
I can feel the eye rolls right now from people listening to this. I can.
Yeah.
I want you to tell those eye rollers why it's important to have these conversations regularly, right? Because the eye rollers are going, this again. We hear this all the time.
Yeah.
Can we just move on to something else? And my answer is no, we can't. But I want you to tell that eye roller why we can't and why the conversation's important to have constantly, ongoing.
Absolutely. So for those eye rollers, why the conversation must continue to happen is because people are still getting murdered because of the way they look. People are not getting jobs because of their names. Right. So if a resume comes across someone's table and their name is Shaniqua and you have Susan, Susan might get the phone call and Shaniqua might not because of their names. But representation matter is because of the Black community as a whole has high population of health issues regarding cardiovascular disease, diabetes, musculoskeletal issues because of the lack of education of health and wellness. And so they might not feel as comfortable going to someone of a different race because they don't feel like they're going to relate to them. But if they have someone that looks like them and can actually educate them on why they need to get massages, why they need to take care of their health and what, you know, and how stress, life stresses, impedes on their health and mental issues, massage helps with that. Also, you know, there's articles out there and it's factual that Black American families are 8 times the lower end of the income. So if middle income is like between 50s and 90,000, we're 8 times as low of even having that in the household. Right. And so it is important. And whether you believe it or not, because they might be in their bubble and don't know any other person in that may be African-American or biracial or you know, or having those issues, you should actually sit down and talk to the person.
So a couple of things that you just said, I wanted to go back to. So one of the things being you mentioned that the largest percentage of therapists, at least in the States, are white women. I don't know where I heard this from, but as you were talking about how it does happen where somebody comes in to get a treatment and they see it's a Black therapist and they say, no, I don't want a Black therapist. I want a white therapist, right to the therapist. Mm-hmm. We've had other people tell us these stories on our podcast. Yep. So I believe you that it happens. Of course, we've heard it from so many other Black therapists, not even always that the person says, I don't want a Black therapist, but they just look at them and immediately say, no, no, no. And then of course, like they know why, right? Mm-hmm. So One of those therapists told me off mic that the highest, like the number of people that she had that happen with, she said it was actually majority white women. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's really, if that's any kind of statistic or she, that was just her experience, her experience was white women. And when Mark was talking about the eye rollers, as a white woman, I will tell you, people feel unusually comfortable saying things to me that I don't think they would say in front of the two of you. And mm-hmm. I'm like, what makes you think it's okay to say that to me? But I have heard a lot of, why are we still having this discussion? Yep. As Mark said, why does everything have to come back to race? Why are Black people trying to segregate themselves again? You know, we don't need to separate and have separate events like this. And, you know, I think I said this on the first time we had you on, that instead of looking at this as like a separation, why aren't we looking at it as exactly as Devonna said, like a celebration? Just Black therapists do make up such a small percentage of our profession. And why does anybody have an issue with having a celebration for these therapists and giving them something like business grants and whatever it is you're doing and prizes and, you know, like you said, representation, having Black educators, because that maybe hadn't been their experience. I don't see why it's always being looked at as, oh, this again, and we're separating. Does anybody take issue with something like, I don't know, like a pride parade? It's a celebration. I mean, people do take issue with that, but this is my point, is why does it have to be that, oh, we're separating again? Why are we coming back to this segregation? How do you respond to people who are saying, like, why is this only for Black therapists?
Why only Black therapists? Because if you go to some of the other conferences, once again, it's 0.0% of representation. So, you know, to be quite honest, I think I was just at the AMTA conference here in Phoenix, and they only had one Black speaker. And I don't even know if she is a massage therapist, to be quite honest. I have to look up her credentials again. Mm. But and then she was like the last day or something like that. But I don't know. But before that, last year, there was no one. Mm-hmm. There was no one. And like, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Benny Vaughn.
Yep. Yep.
Benny Vaughn has been in the industry for 47 years and been an AMT member and board member. And, you know, and I know he's asked to be a speaker, a keynote, and he has not yet been granted that opportunity.
Hmm. That's interesting.
And this man has been, he's also an athletic trainer.
Yeah, he's very accomplished.
Many years of experience. Yep. And been in many different atmospheres regarding massage and sports and at the Olympics and many different Olympic games. How many massage therapists can say that they've been to at least 5 Olympic games?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, That is interesting that he hasn't been given that opportunity. And, you know, there's going to be eye rollers saying, why does, you know, it doesn't have to do with race. And I can tell you a personal story. I don't remember if I said this on the last episode, but this was something that was brought to my attention years back before I partnered with the people that organized the Canadian Massage Conference. Somebody said to me, because Mark had been asked to present, and somebody said to me, did you notice that your husband's the only person of color that's presenting this year? And I was like, shit, he is the only person of color on the entire roster. So because I really respect the people that organize the CMC, and I thought maybe this was an oversight, maybe it's something they'd want to know, like this is valuable feedback. So I went to them and said, like, hey, did you guys know this? And they both kind of did the same thing I did. Shit. It really is like that. So that's been a goal of the CMC, to increase, you know, have diversity with people of color, but also more women. It was like literally like white men was the entire roster of speakers. But the part I was going to tell you is, when I mentioned this in front of somebody who is not part of the organization. She was sort of just a bystander. And when I mentioned this, she got really defensive instantly. like, well, it's not like we're excluding people of color. If they don't apply to present, then how are they going to present? And I just kind of looked at her for a second and I didn't say anything. I just thought, why are you even upset about this? Like, I'm not accusing you of anything. Like, why the defensiveness instantly? It was just an observation that maybe all of us should take into consideration. Why aren't there more women on this speaker list? Why aren't there more people of color on this speaker list? Because as you said over and over, and I've repeated over and over, representation matters. If you see a whole panel of nothing but white men at a conference, I don't know, maybe that's just going to be a turnoff right away. And that's something we should be thinking about. So I was happy that someone brought that to my attention, but it was really interesting that somebody got immediately defensive. Like, again, why are you bringing up the racism thing again? And as you and Mark have said, because it hasn't disappeared. I think that's the thing people forget, is it's not like racism doesn't exist. If every Black therapist I've ever encountered has told me, yes, I have had people walk out because they don't want me to touch them. Yeah, uh-huh. There's still a problem.
Yeah, for me, as long as there's a learning opportunity anywhere, then the conversation should be happening.
Yeah.
And there's obviously learning opportunities in this, because there are a lot of people that don't recognize that this type of thing goes on. It doesn't occur to you that this type of thing goes on.
Yeah, like Devonna said, you're living in a bubble.
Yeah, and it's important to recognize, like, this is the place in which you live, and these are your colleagues, and these are your clients, and these are your patients. And the more you hear the stories, the better understanding you walk away with. And that's all I think we're looking for, is for generally a better understanding.
Yeah.
And I'm not looking for sympathy. I'm not looking for a handout. I'm not looking for anything else. I'm looking for a better understanding in general. Mm-hmm. For most things, right?
I have white friends who support the conference, who support me as a whole, because they know who I am and they know what I represent. And they've been educated and they've been around my family and they understand the oppression, right? And so you have to understand. I talked to another colleague and friend of mine. She's like, I don't know how you deal with being the only one all the time. Mm-hmm. She said, I went down south to visit my husband's family, and we went into a restaurant, and it was 99% Black. And she said she felt so uncomfortable, and no one was doing anything to her. You know how they is back down south? They're like, they want to feed you till you explode. Yep. Fill up your plate till it can't. And they're like, come on, come down here, sit down. You know, they was greeting her, but she said she felt so uncomfortable.
I wish more white people could actually not like have that experience necessarily, but just understand that, because that's something, you know, like I said, people are, why are we still talking about this? Why separation? So for example, when you were talking earlier, Devonna, and you said in your area, like you didn't have your face on your website because you were the only Black therapist. And I know right away there'd be people listening to that saying, so what? Why does it matter that you're the only one? Well, until you actually really understand that, I think that you're going to keep having that same thought. Like, why does it matter if you're the only one? I feel like white people say that all the time. What does it matter? What does it matter? But I can, again, tell you from personal experience, I know a white person who moved into a neighborhood about 3 years ago that is predominantly East Indian. And she has children, and her children are going to be going to school. And she said to me, I think my kids are going to be the only white kids at the school. Everyone's going to be Indian. And I was like, does that bother you? Like, is that a problem for you? And she said, oh, I don't know. I feel like they're going to get left out. Like, interesting. Like, she was worried that her kids were going to be the only two. So suddenly her white children were going to be the minority somewhere. And I think that in that moment, then we had that discussion. I was like, that's a weird feeling, eh? Because we don't experience that very often, being the only one.
Be the only one for 30 days.
Be the only one.
And see how you feel. And we live our life that way. Like, I just, like my mom, one of her friends invited her to the church, and they've been going to Bible study, and she didn't make it to yesterday. And I was like, oh, okay. did you know anybody else? She was like, no. I was like, was there anybody else? Because her friend is Hispanic, and so, but it's a predominantly white church. And so she was like, oh, well, I'm so used to being the only one. It's just at this point, this is just the way we live our life. And my mom is 76 years old, right?
Yeah.
So this is what we deal with. And we're fine and we're gracious about it. And obviously there's no, you know, hate or anything. It's just, this is what we deal with. So, and we're comfortable in our skin, but think of someone who's not comfortable in their skin and how they may feel.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to read something that Mark sent to me. He reminded me about a comment when we published your first episode back in February. Somebody asked the question, what's next? A conference for only white massage therapists? How about yellow? And I was happy somebody responded back saying, are you serious about this? What is your purpose for making this comment? You're asking this question as if you do not already know why this conference for Black therapists is a need. Clearly, you're being sarcastic. Clearly, it's showing more than you think. The person never responded, but that's, I think, what you guys were talking about with the eye rollers. Like, there's people like, why does there need to be a Black massage therapist conference? And I don't know how else to get through to people like that.
Would you guys consider in the next years allowing anyone that's not Black to participate in the conference as an attendee?
No, but what we did consider is allowing anyone that's not Black as a vendor or exhibitor.
Right.
Because we'll have a exhibit hall. Our plan is to have like an exhibit hall next year.
Give me the idea of the thought process behind that. I mean, I kind of understand why, but I also would love to have been a fly on the wall when someone brought up, if someone brought up on your team, like, hey, are we going to let non-Black folk into this conference?
Well, I mean, it happened because it's uncomfortable to say Black, even if you're Black.
Really?
Because you already know there's going to be a defense mechanism that may come up mm-hmm. from the opposing person, because that's just the way this world is, right? And so let me give you an example before I get into that. Let me give you an example. So I was listening to a podcast and Jamie Foxx had mentioned that he feels like Jesus being crucified or something to that nature. And so the Jewish culture took it as like blasphemy. Mm. And what he was saying was basically he felt like the friends he had were being like a Judas was going against him. Right. And this was, it was a, I can't think of the exact term he used, but basically it's a colloquialism that we use in the Black community. It has nothing to do with Jewish people.
Right.
Basically, you treated me like this. Now I feel like, you know, you're hanging me out to dry, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But because the Jewish people felt a certain way, they wanted him to apologize, because they felt it was offensive to them. Mm. But it had nothing to do with them. But he apologized anyway. And all that is to say that every culture has its own sauce, if you will. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And certain things won't always translate over into another culture. So, for instance, and we call it cultural appropriation. Hey, girl, what's up? Hey, girl, hey. That was really how Black women greeted each other.
Mm-hmm.
But now, because of the world we live in, we have social media, you know, so different counterparts take it. But then if you don't really know me, I don't want you to greet me like that. Mm. Because that's something comfortable with I do in my community or with friends. And so there's certain things that we could look at each other. I could be in a room. It could be just two, me and another Black person, and something happened and we look at each other and we already could agree like that was crazy. It's just certain things we can't express. That's why it's great to have a conference that we all can communicate the same way and don't feel like we have to be someone else. We call it code switching. For instance, if I'm in a group, if I'm at work with, and I work with 99% white people, and I'm like, hello, how are you? Da 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 da. But then when I'm home, I'm like, what's up, my dude? How's it? Da da da. Right? So it's called code switching. So I know how to act when I'm amongst, you know, the other cultures. But when I'm home and I can wear my hair down, I can then speak the way I want to speak, which is comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Mark looks like he's deep in thought right now.
I am.
Yeah. So it's just a sense of comfort. And then to be quite honest, in different parts of the country, our Ebonics or the way we speak or different languages is different. So when I got married to my husband, he's from the Midwest and I'm from the East Coast. When the day before the wedding at the dinner, he was like, yeah, your hair is, it was like, it was, to me, it was disrespectful. Like it was flat or something like that. I looked at him like, what'd you just say to me? Now, when you say it's flat to me in New York, that means it's like whack, it's ugly. But to him, it's like, no, it's bumping. It looks good. Right. Yeah, yeah. So even within our own community, we have different languages depending on where you were born and raised.
So the idea of not extending the invite to other cultures other than, you know, vendors, because, you know, that's an opportunity to promote themselves. The idea is you want this to be a space that people in the Black community can come and know they can be themselves. Everybody that's there in some way, shape or form understands their experiences. Like you said, it's going to be different. Like there's cultural differences everywhere, but at least understands the experience of possibly a being the only one, not having all the representation. Like forget just the massage community. What is the percentage of Black Americans? Isn't it like 13%? Like such a small population in such a big country. So it to me makes sense that it's just about having something that's for you. And it doesn't have to mean like, you know, we're separate, we're better. Like it's this idea that other people are getting that, you know, why are we always talking about race and why are you always separating yourselves? It's not that. It's just you're a small community trying to celebrate something and uplift each other and make each other better. And I just don't see a big issue with it that people are having.
I would just because I'm me and I would like to see things. I would be so curious as to what the registration would be like for non-Black participants. So in other words, if you open it up next year and you don't say anything about, you know, attendees and what we're looking for, I'm curious to see how many therapists who are not Black would want to attend, you know, a Black massage therapist conference.
I think you'd have two groups of people. I think you'd have people who would want to go in showing support and saying, you know, we're allies and we're here and we want to learn and, you know, we want to show our support. And then you would have another group of people that would say, like, this isn't for me and I'm not going to go because I feel awkward and I'm not part of this.
With the folks that want to give support, do you feel that any part of that is like moral posturing? I don't know. What's the other term that I call
virtue signaling?
Yes. Do you feel like that any there's a percentage of that that's like that moral posturing? Like look at me. Look what I'm doing.
There might be some people.
Look at the support
that
I'm
giving. Thinks.
To,
I'm sure
to,
that
to
I'm
the Black massage therapist community.
Once again, I'm sure there's like two.
Yeah, I've had a guy said, "Oh, I can't believe you're doing this because I go to Africa and I do mission in Kenya," and I'm like, "Oh, that's so great. That's nice that you do that." So what you done to
I fail to see the connection here.
Black poor kids here in America. And what have you done and spoke to Black massage therapists in the industry that if you know any? And he went silent. So I mean, so to your point, Mark, is that what you were asking? Like the posturing? Like proving that you still help?
Trying to look a certain way to show like, you know, I am not a person who is racist. I am a person who wants to be an ally. I am a person who wants to be supportive. And I'm sure, like I said at the beginning, there's two groups of people. Yeah. There's genuine people who, you know, absolutely wish that these conversations didn't have to happen. And then there are people who, you know, can like to pretend, you know, it was like, where were we? We were somewhere one time and somebody said something that was pretty offensive and I remember turning to them saying, like, did you really just say that? And like, you also know, like, I'm not, like, I have a black husband, right? Like, did you really just say that? And their response was, no, like, no disrespect. I have black friends. I'm like, oh boy.
See, when you start that no disrespect, you already know you was disrespectful.
Right. Exactly. I was like, oh boy. Okay.
Yeah. No, I just think it's interesting. If you want to be an ally, we welcome allies, right? Allies are people who help in sharing the news.
Yes.
If you know any other black therapists, letting them know about the conference.
Spread the word.
If you want to be an ally, like I just said, the statistic, I did pull it up. If you want to be an ally, donating to the conference, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Donating, because it's not easy, as you guys know, organizing a conference.
It is not.
This wasn't part of my ultimate plan.
I think we might have asked you the first time we talked to you, like, are you okay? Are you doing all right? What made you take on something like this?
This was not something I really sought out to do. But, you know, if you want to be an ally, and I hate that word ally.
It is a weird word. I feel weird saying it.
That's one of those new trendy words. I'm an ally.
Why do you feel weird saying it?
Because I also feel if we're using your terminology, it is like moral posturing for you to establish yourself as like, I'm an ally. Right. I feel it's weird. Right. I don't know. I don't love the word.
I'm just a person doing what I do.
Yeah. It feels strange to say.
It's interesting. Such an interesting conversation. Such an interesting talk.
But here was the takeaway. And this was an article that was in one of the financial magazines like Forbes or something like that. It says racial wealth gap is still so wide. The typical white family has 8 times the wealth of the typical black family.
That doesn't really surprise me though. When things were happening and things were getting very heated, as you said, in 2020 in the States, and there was, you know, everything you were seeing in the news and on social media was about racism. And, you know, obviously what happened with George Floyd was kind of what kicked it off in 2020. And then it just sort of exploded and everything became like us versus them. And everyone's fighting about, you know, everything. Everything was just crazy. And I remember just getting really frustrated. Like, can we all just like stop with all of the politics and the bullshit and like actually listen to people? And if you have people in your circle who are telling you loudly, like, yes, we do experience racism and this happens, listen to them. But when it comes to the wealth gap, I was having a conversation with somebody who was very much on the, are we really having this race conversation again? And I said, like, all you have to actually remember is like segregation still existed when my father was born. Like, it's not like we're talking about something that was 7,000 years ago. Like, my dad isn't even retirement age, and this was still a thing. So how are we going to expect that people who didn't have equal opportunity even, what, 70 years ago, that they've caught up financially and economically and socially? Of course not. Like, you can't just play catch up. You're at a huge disadvantage to begin with. And yes, there are people who overcome oppression, because that's the other argument that comes at me all the time is, what are you trying? Somebody actually said to me, are you trying to tell me your husband's oppressed? He has a good wife, good kids. He owns a home. He runs a business. He's oppressed. And I'm like, you're right. Nobody can ever overcome oppression. Like, no, absolutely not.
Do experiences like that in comments, do they bring you down, or do they just add to like the drive to do what you're doing? Do you know what I mean? I'll give you an example. I'll give you a real life example. There's a Bob Marley song called Cornerstone. The stone that the builder refused will always be the head cornerstone. You're a builder, baby. Here I am, a stone. Don't you pick and refuse me, because the things people refuse are the things they should use. Do you hear me? Hear what I say. The stone, the blah, blah, blah. Cool. This is the story to the song. Bob Marley's father was white European. Bob Marley's father fathered several children. The Marley name in Jamaica was a construction company. His father and his father's brother's family, they owned this construction company. Bob Marley had no relationship with his father, because his father was, you know, a gallivanting, you know, European man. And so Bob Marley's now coming up, doing a lot of reggae stuff in Jamaica. He's embraced Rastafarianism. And he wants to purchase a car so he can drive around to distribute his records. So he decides to go into the offices at Marley and whatever construction company. And he walks in, and they're all white because that's his dad's white, right? So his uncles and stuff are there, and they're like, they're all in shock because they're like, shit, who's this black Rasta that looks like us? Do you know what I mean? And he's pretty much saying, hey, my father's a Marley. My father's your brother. You're my uncle. Can you donate some money for me to get a car and help me out here? And they denounce. They refuse. They're like, you're not, we don't know what you're talking about. You're not Norvell's kid. And then he took that as inspiration. He's like, you know what? They denied me. It inspired me to go write that song. 1970, head cornerstone, right? So do you take that stuff and spin it like how Robert Nesta Marley spun that? He's like, I got fed a negative. You know what, man? I'm going to write a song and I'm going to make it a hit and blah, blah, blah. And it's actually really funny because he is the refused Marley that the world knows. The world don't know the white Marley. The world knows Bob Marley. The head cornerstone now is him. The stone that the builder refused, you know what I mean, became the head cornerstone. Do you use it as fuel for you? Or do you get mad at it and it burns a different way?
Nope. I use it as fuel is for me. That's my life. That's my life, right? So absolutely. I keep going. I keep pushing. I inspire my team, right? I'll take the heat from my team, you know, because if someone's saying something, obviously, you know, they don't know how to respond always, or they're too nervous to post all the time. And that's okay. And I'll be the forefront. But, you know, I'm protected. I'm God's child. Nothing's going to happen to me. This wasn't my idea. But in the same token, it needs to happen. And for those who are attending, they're excited. We have people driving down. We have people flying in. They can't wait.
I never even thought of that angle. I never even thought of the idea that you might have people that are participating in this or that are involved in the organization, and they don't even want to share it because they're in fear of the blowback that they might get.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%, Mark.
You blew my mind. That didn't even occur to me until you said that right now. You said it so casually, like, you know. But I was like, what? I can't imagine a member of our Canadian Massage Therapy Conference team not wanting to promote what we're doing because of the blowback that they might get. I was like, what?
Yeah, in the beginning, it was very fearful. This, you know... Yeah, for the most part, everybody shares now. But in the beginning, it was a little tipping in the water.
You guys knew that that this was going to happen, though, right? Like you, I'm speaking to Devonna. Like
yes,
you knew there were going to be people that had a big problem with this, right? Like I'm sure that you guys had discussions about this prior to how you're going to handle it, how you're going to address these negative comments or the eye rollers. Was it more than you expected? Was it less than you expected?
Right on target.
I think it was right on. I think it probably is a little bit less. I'm actually was really blown away about the amount of support I received.
Yeah.
I was actually ready. I was ready for the heat because I got the heat. Of course I get the heat, but I thought I would get a lot more, mm-hmm. but the support and the love and I understand without having to say I'm an ally or whatever the case may be, that I hate that term. I'll be your ally. Like I understand, what can I do, Devonna? How can I help, Devonna? Mm-hmm. I got more of that than the heat. And the That's heat good. Was coming from locations that I'm like, of course you would say that.
I'm curious as to those locations.
I'll tell you. You want to hear it?
Yeah, I want to know where was the most hate coming
from? I've gotten heat from, you know, Mississippi. I got heat from Arkansas, and I got heat from Ohio.
Okay.
Mind you, I went to school in Cincinnati and Ohio for my undergrad. I went to Xavier University. It's a Jesuit school. It's a big D1 school. I was surprised at the time when I was there, the KKK was still having rallies in the middle of their downtown area. And everybody was okay with it. And I'm like, and this was like 99, 2000. And I'm like, where am I? You understand? Like they, it was known that they came in once a year. I don't know if they still do it, but they came down to the square downtown and they had their little outside and, you know, and that was like 99, 2000. So getting the heat from Mississippi, getting the heat from Ohio, getting the heat from Arkansas, you know, and honestly, again, majority is middle-aged white women.
Interesting. Do you think it's because they're like, do they feel like, I don't understand. Like, what is it with the middle-aged white women?
It's the clutch my pearls. This is one of their, she didn't say clutch my pearls, but this is just me being sarcastic. Right. But clutch my pearls. I've been doing this for 33 years and I have not heard such of a thing.
It's amazing to me though, because if you do live in the States and you do see, like, even as you just said, like, the KKK were still having rallies in like 1999, 2000. Like, guys, mm-hmm. this is like, you know, 23, 24 years ago. Like, this is like 10 minutes ago. This was still happening. So if you do live in a bubble and you don't recognize that, you know, there is still just like overt racism. That's the thing. Like, there's covert racism everywhere, but like just open, we'll say whatever. And as I said, because I am a white woman, I sometimes people feel really comfortable saying things in front of me and I'm like, what? Like, they just think it's totally fine because they assume I agree.
What do you do? Like, what do you say?
So I will tell you, like, for example, I had somebody that I was going to, like a service provider that I was going to for years. Like, I'm talking, I started seeing this person, I was like 17 years old, and mm-hmm. she made one remark about, somebody got shot across the street from where I live, actually. Somebody got shot and it was a black man that got shot and he was shot by another black man. Like what the news report said, you know, suspect, black man, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And the person that I was going to is a white woman. And she said to me, did you hear about the shooting? Because she knows I live really close by. I said, of course I did. Like, that was literally, like, I could walk there. It was literally across the street from where I live. And she said, why are there no riots and protests? Where's Black Lives Matter? Oh, it's because nobody cares if a black man shoots a black man. And I was like, I don't even know what the fuck to say to you right now. Like, that was my response to her. I was like, I don't even know what the fuck to say to you right now. Like, what do you mean nobody cares? And that was the last time I ever saw her.
Do you take those moments to try to have a conversation, or is it just too much in shock and just like, what the fuck's going on?
Well,
and
I
just
mean,
walk away.
Are you asking me? Because you know me and you know the number of conversations I've had. And I've gone to Mark saying, like, and I said this just now in the episode. I'm like, I don't even understand how to get through to people. Sometimes it just seems so circular. It's like, I was going to ask you guys, have you ever had a positive outcome having a race conversation with somebody who didn't quite understand? Like, have you ever had it where somebody's like, oh, I see this now. I get this now.
I think I need to define positive outcome first.
Well, okay.
And for me, a positive outcome on a race conversation is I walk away with a better understanding of why you think the way you think. And why you say things the way you say them and why you act the way you act. Whether you change or not, or I've changed your mind or you've changed mine or you've taken my points into play, that to me doesn't necessarily make it a positive outcome. My positive outcome for me is I've got a better understanding for you as a person and I get it now, right? And whether I agree with whatever this is or I don't agree, at least I have a better understanding. So for that service provider, like, I would want to know, like, well, what do you mean by that? Can you, like, tell me a little bit more about what are you saying? But I would do it in a non-conflict, and I just want to understand you a little bit better. And if I understand you a little bit better, then it's just, I feel like I just have a better understanding of people. And then to me, that's a positive outcome.
So when I responded to her and saying, like, I don't even know what to say to you right now, like, what do you mean? She did get a little defensive and she's like, well, I just mean, like, all you ever hear in the news is about cops shooting black people. It's, right. You know, the cops are bad and they're racist. And she's like, so when a black person shoots another black person, why isn't there the same like outrage and outcry kind of thing? And, you know, we had it, this was like, I don't know, 6 years ago.
Suggesting that the media, the mainstream media frames it in such a way to create this idea of racial tension. Is that?
Yes, that's okay. What she was saying. And that's what I heard from a lot of people. people. So I said 6 years ago. It was 3 years ago. Okay. Wow, my timeline. Well. But this conversation with her 3 years ago seemed to be the same conversation that was happening all over the place of like, why, you know, why are we focusing on when a black person gets shot by the police? White people get shot by the police all the time. And I'm like, this is the dumbest conversation. And I just, I mean, like I said, Mark knows the number of conversations I had because it was just so, it was so bizarre to me. Like I was telling him just the other day, I said, I have a really big problem, and he's really good at this, and I'm just not. I have a really big problem wrapping my head around the way other people think. I'm not naive enough to think that everybody thinks the way I do, but sometimes when somebody says something like that's stupid, like my entire brain just shuts down. I'm like, I don't know how to talk to you. Like, I can't believe you actually like think that way. Like, I don't know. So I feel like I get into these conversations and I try to understand them and I explain to them like what, you know, why I think the way I do, but I don't feel I've ever had a really positive outcome.
In those scenarios, I don't even explain or attempt to explain why I think the way I think. In those scenarios,
you just want to hear from
them. I just want to understand why you think the way you think. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a win if I walk away going, I get you. I understand you. I ain't agree with it, or I agree with it, or I can empathize with it, or I can sympathize with it. I get you, though. I get you a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And that comment that you made or that thing that you said, it's got a slightly different meaning now because I understand you a little bit better.
Right.
Now, whether that's a understanding better for the worse or understanding for the better, I still understand you a little bit better.
What about you, Devana? Have you ever had a conversation with somebody who just didn't understand why race conversations were important and had an outcome, whether positive in the definition that Mark gave or positive in the definition that maybe they were like, huh, I never really looked at it that way?
Most of the time it's with people I may know of or have been in contact with in regards to business. So prior to this, that's why I was like, oh, I'm built for it. Around the 2020 George Floyd situation, I was part of my chamber at the time. And instead of just presenting about my business itself, I took it upon myself to present about Black businesses and the statistics and women, and then also Black women owned businesses. And I got so much heat from that presentation. And it was because at one point I did say Black Lives Matter, but not necessarily in representing the political group and meaning that Black Lives Matter, period, because we were dropping like flies around that time of all the shootings. But I did have a conversation with a colleague and a friend, and he was actually one of my clients as well. We had to sit down at lunch, and he took upon what somebody else interpreted. I was like, so you guys missed everything I said regarding statistics, everything I said about regarding the wealth gap, everything I said about, you know, ownership, and you only heard that one thing, right? And so for you to make that one thing to be big, you have to look at yourself. The one lady took it as the BLM, meaning to kill police officers, Black people kill police officers. And I'm like, where did that even come from? Because nothing I said in my presentation said that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so we had an honest conversation, and we both came around to saying, okay, I hear what you're saying. So he said, I get it now, Devana. I'm sorry, I misinterpreted that. And then I was able to also hear like, this is where you come from, and I see it. However, thank you for listening to me to hear where I was coming from, instead of taking from where you come from and misconstrue everything I said, which she did, because you missed all the business portion, all the percentage, all the stats that and it came from the U.S., you know, Department of Labor and all sorts of things. So it's just interesting. But if I know something, to be honest, Amanda and Mark, and I know that it's right to be true, I'm 10 toes down. But what I'm not going to do is constantly go back and forth with you. I'm going to say what I'm going to say, and I'm going to just leave it on the table. And you take what I say, and you either could actually listen and think about it, or you can just like, I still don't believe you, or I don't want
to
hear it.
You don't feel it's your responsibility to like, let me hit this message home with you.
No,
it's like, here's my message. No. If you're into receiving it, I'm down for a conversation. And if you're not into receiving it, well, this is probably where we part ways.
Yeah, and a conversation is constructive. An argument isn't.
Well, that's the thing, because everyone sees things through their own filtered lens, and they process it through their own filtered lens.
And they cherry pick, as Devonna said. They heard her say Black Lives Matter and immediately went political. And, you know, that was my whole issue a few years ago with everything going political. I was saying, like, why do we have to always be us versus them? Why do we have to talk about Black Lives Matter? Like, the point is, okay, so for example, the person I was talking about who said, why are we always hearing the media about cops shooting Black people, but it's not the same when the problem is within their own community? I was like, okay, everybody knows that the media is a little corrupt. Like, let's just all, we can all agree on every political side. We all know that, you know, the media is going to report in the way they want to, in the narrative they want to, and that's just the way it is. So let's forget about that then and actually just listen to people. And as I said before, if you listen to people that are telling you they experience racism, well, regardless of whose fault it is, regardless if it's this government or that government or that, doesn't matter. I mean, the media probably has a big, big role in this whole thing. The fact that people know. So, for example, that instance where there was a man in a park bird watching and a white woman and him got into an argument about a dog, right?
Sorry, I just got upset. Yeah.
That instance, she knew that she could say, I'm being harassed by an African-American man, instead of just, I'm being harassed by a man. Like, that to me is the only point to say, like, people know that everybody's thinking something already, or there's already some sort of prejudice when you say like an African-American man versus like just a man. Mm-hmm. A man is following me in the park. Okay. An African-American man is following me in the park. She knows that a cop might listen to that very differently. I'm not saying all cops are racist. I'm, you know, because that's the thing. Oh, cops are not racist. Not all cops are bad. Nobody said that. But even the fact that the media reports things the way they do, that's a little bit intentional. That's just this whole idea of this racism that's just so ingrained that exists everywhere. Everybody has their own ideas of different cultures and cultural appropriation and all these freaking buzzwords and allies.
That's why these conversations are important.
Yeah.
Right? To me, it's we do all see things through our own lens, and we filter it that way, and then we process it that way. And if I have the opportunity to understand your lens better, and I understand therefore how you process and understand, then we're making good moves here. Like, like this podcast is about people and their stories, right? Because everyone can learn from someone else's experience, and everyone can learn from understanding a little bit deeper as to how someone has an experience and how they've interpreted it, how they've internalized it, how they played on it, how they've reacted to it. And it all just, it's all about just being a fucking human. Do you know what I mean? It's such a weird go, but it's such an important piece at the same time.
Well, on a positive note, I'm really happy to hear that you've gained so much support from the industry.
When you were saying that story, and when you were talking about clutching pearls, and I thought of this comedian that I saw on Instagram or TikTok or something, and he's like, I walked into this elevator, and like, there's this white lady in the elevator, and immediately she clutches her purse, and she's holding it close. And I was like, lady, why are you clutching your purse? Just let go. Why are we playing tug of war? Made me laugh, man. I'm like, that was funny.
I wondered why you were laughing. I was telling the story about the bird watcher, and he looks at me and he's laughing, and I'm like, did I say something funny? Like, was he not watching
his
birds?
His whole setup, like, she was clutching her purse when she saw me walk in the elevator, and I was like, lady, just let it go. Let's stop playing tug of war.
But it's true. We bring, so this was something I was just talking to somebody. We bring laughter to pain, right? That's exactly what he did. He just flipped it. He brought laughter to pain.
Everyone thinks I'm crazy because I take a cue off comedians so much when it comes to when it comes to looking at the world and how the world operates and everything else, right? And I said this many, many times on this podcast. When comedians get scared because of cancel culture, we're got a problem here, because your job is to find the funny in things that aren't funny, because there is funny in the most non-funny things. You know what I mean? Right. Like Dave Chappelle said, like, there's funny in everything and everyone finds it's funny until it happens to you. Do you know what I mean? Then maybe it's not so, but it was funny until it happened to you. And so, you know, the social commentary from comedians to me is a big way to look at society as a whole, and to see how comedians, these jokes that they do get accepted, to me is a representation of society as a whole. So I view comics very, very different than just some funny guys that make jokes.
You're reminding me of another conversation I had probably in 2020 on Facebook with somebody, and I brought that up, that idea of comedians, and because we were talking when they were saying, like, systematic racism is a scam, like, that doesn't exist. Why do people think that's real?
They said it's a scam, Amanda.
A scam. Literal words. It's a scam. Doesn't exist. This is what I mean, why I have trouble with it, but I'm like, okay, let me have the conversation. Like, I have to really put so much effort to, like, okay, let me not just start yelling at you. Let's break this down. What did you, okay, so they said systematic racism doesn't exist. So we talked about the media, and I said, even the fact that the media reports things in a certain way. So we talked about the idea that, you know, the way that white criminals and black criminals are referred to in publications, very different. We talked about, again, that story of the bird watcher and how the woman knew to make sure that the cops knew this was a black man, because that somehow was going to be interpreted differently. And then I was saying, even comedians, because what do comedians do? They try to poke fun at stereotypes, but they try to poke fun at stereotypes. Okay. And I said, what do comedians very often talk about when they're referring to black people? You guys tell me, what is it they're making fun of? Are these things that are necessarily painting black people in a positive light, what the comedians do? And I said, and, like, yeah, we laugh, but the reason that the comedians are doing that is because there is an undertone of the entire world thinking that a lot of these stereotypes are true and real. And this is how they paint all black people. If they don't have experience, if they don't live in places that are not in a bubble and experience diversity and different cultures, they would assume, like, you know, Indian people are this way, Chinese people are this way, Spanish people are this way, black people are this way, because that's what they see and what they hear. Television shows, comedians, news, publications, everything, there is this undertone of, like, this is the way things are. Even the arguments that happen on social media about cultural appropriation, Devana, it's like, it just blows my mind. People say things like, well, why do you have to act white? Why do you have to act black? And I'm like, okay, clearly, like, this is enough proof for me that racism still exists. Conversations still have to happen. Because even the fact that two people, I just saw something the other day.
Yeah.
I saw something the other day as a white woman who had a very traditionally black hairstyle. And there was a bunch of black creators that said to her, they were actually trying to help her. A lot of them were saying, like, this is a protective hairstyle and you're going to fuck up your hair. You're going to have to cut off all your hair. And then there was a bunch of people saying, take that out. Like, you look ridiculous. Do you even know what? And so there was this whole argument back and forth. And she was just antagonizing the black creators who were saying, like, no, stop doing that. And she was antagonizing them over and over and over again. She finally decided to take her hair out. And guess what had to happen? She had to cut off all her fucking hair because she ruined it.
I wish you gave me more detail.
I'll show you the videos. I'll show you guys the details. I'll show you guys the videos afterwards. But yeah, she had to cut off all her hair because she decided to do a hairstyle that was not meant for her texture of hair.
It's weird to me. There's a couple reasons why it's weird to me. Hip hop culture has influenced so many avenues. It's insane. Hip hop culture coming out of New York, black New York, from the streets of New York, has influenced music, has influenced fashion, has influenced all of these things that the world eats up. So at the end of the day, I understand why why this little white kid is looking and talking in the way he does, because hip hop culture has influenced things so much, and hip hop culture, that influence is the popular thing. So it's like everyone wants this. Everyone wants to be the popular thing. But when you don't realize, it's like this actually, it's such a weird go, because the culture is so influential. And none of its originators get credit, with the exception of those from that community.
You said the magic word. That's all that any culture cares about. Nobody's trying to erase culture. In fact, we want to celebrate culture. Nobody's trying to be colorblind. That's ridiculous. It's, you know, it's beautiful that there's all of these different races and ethnicities and cultures, and that's great. We're not trying to erase it. The only thing when it comes to something like cultural appropriation is, do you know where this comes from? Are you giving credit to the creators? Is credit going where credit is due? And when it comes to something like hairstyles, I've seen a lot of Black creators talk about, like, not only are we not getting credit, like, that's not even the biggest thing. That's the biggest slap in the face, is that Black women were told, like, this was ugly, this is unprofessional, don't wear your hair like this. But now these white girls do it and they're like, you look great.
It looks good, girl.
It looks good. Yeah. Like, we had a Black therapist on, Jasmine. I think she actually might be coming to your conference, Devana. But we had her on the podcast, and she spoke about that, how at a clinic she was working at, when she got hired, she had like a straight sort of weave, like long, like flowy hair. And so she said every time she wanted to change up her hairstyle, she would always take it out and like let her natural hair, I guess, breathe for some time.
Yeah,
and,
you know, breathe, right?
Yeah. So she would give her hair some time to just be in its natural state. And so she shows up to work and she's got her natural curls and her hair is short and it's like afro. And her boss said, oh, why'd you do that? Your hair was so much nicer before.
Of course.
And I mean, both Mark and I just kind of face palmed in that moment. Like, one, why are you commenting on your employee's appearance? Like, forget anything else. Why are you even saying that? But like, that's the kind of negative comments Black women are getting for their natural hair and their styles. And then, you know, white women are doing it and it's amazing. And it goes down to, like I said, I see all these arguments on social media about cultural appropriation. It goes down to body shape, the lips. Every white woman in the world wants these like big luscious lips, and we're injecting all sorts of poisonous shit into our face. And Black women are like, we have always had these. And yeah, we were told they are not attractive. And now all of you white people are doing it. And now what? This is the attractive thing?
Yep. Really quick on the hair part, on the hair portion. So not only they comment on your hair, it's always a part of the conversation. What is your hair going to look like now, Devana? Mm. I'm always intrigued. Even at clients, I'm intrigued. What hairstyle are you doing next? How many times a client said to you, Amanda, or any other white woman, are they looking forward to seeing what your hairstyle is going to be?
Nobody gives a shit about my hair. Devana, I have had purple hair. I have had teal hair. Currently, I have blue hair. You can't really see it because it's up in a bun. I have had every color hair. Not once has someone said to me, oh, what are you doing next? Nobody cares.
Yep.
My hair is the least interesting thing about me.
They were intrigued what I was going to do next. They knew better not to touch, or my clients knew better if they had to ask. I don't play that. Don't just touch my hair.
Even asking, though, that's super weird. Like, why?
I'm trying to tell you, these are the things that happen.
I know that. It's just super weird. Like, why do you? Someone once said something to me, and I thought it like, I wish everybody could hear this. So I'm going to say it. Someone said, like, just because you're curious doesn't mean you should ask.
That was when we had someone who transitioned on the couch.
Yes.
And they were talking about...
We had
about
a trans person, yes, talking about
names.
What was your name before? Well, did you have all the surgeries? Just because you are curious, you don't don't have a right to know anything about anybody. Yeah, you do not need to ask. Not everything that pops into your head needs to come out of your mouth. So I don't know what would ever possess someone to say, like, can I touch your hair?
But
that's
again,
fucking weird.
Again, that's why these conversations are important, because someone just heard that right now and is like, get the fuck out of here. People do that? Someone said that to you? And the answer is, goddamn right, someone said that to me.
And that's why there's more black black books for little kids, especially girls, talking about your hair and how precious it is and how to honor it and make sure no one touches it or make you feel bad about it. Absolutely.
It does need to happen. Speaking of little girls, I'm sorry, I have to toss this in here because it goes exactly with what Devonna was just saying. Mark and I have a family member who is, I think, one of two black kids in her entire school. And she has like type 4 hair and has experienced her entire, I mean, how old is she now? 11? Her entire life at school, you know, all the other girls wanting to touch her hair, talking about her hair. How does it do that? Oh, that's, again, what are you going to do next? And she literally has cried to her mother over, and her mother is actually Italian. Her mother's not black. She gets her hair from her dad's side. And she has said to her mother, like, why can't I just have your hair? Why can't we just straighten my hair? What, like, she hates her hair because it's this topic of conversation. And like this poor 11-year-old girl, like I think about that and I'm like, see, again, this is why this is important. This poor child who just wants to go to school and play with her friends, and then all this attention is on something as insignificant as her hair.
Tell her to pick up one of those books. There's a lot of them now. Just look on Amazon.
So again, coming back to the idea of this is important stuff. Like when someone hears, oh, you holding a black massage conference? I don't understand what that's all about. Why do you do that? And then you start to hear these experiences of black massage therapists and stuff that would blow someone else's mind. Then I kind of understand where you're going with a black conference, right? So until you hear that story and these continuous stories from this therapist and this therapist and this therapist and this therapist, all having these very similar shared experiences, and you throw it all together, now it's like someone goes back to the thinking like, okay, I get this a little bit more. On face value, I might have been like, I don't fucking understand. What the hell is this all about?
Yeah.
But now when you hear the stories, you're like, it's starting to all make a little bit more sense.
And two, Mark, if they didn't have someone else to talk to about it, and now you can also hear, how did you deal with it?
Yes.
Yeah. So
now they can go back to their town or their city where they're the only or maybe one of two. And like, okay, now I know because such and such told me this is how she was able to get through it. And, you know, so you come back with information. You come back with newfound friends. Newfound colleagues.
Confidence, hopefully, because if you know, like you said, if you're the only one in your town, you're the only black massage therapist, and just having, knowing that there's a whole community of people that are supporting you that you can talk to, and being able to have confidence in how to deal with, you know, a white woman walking in, looking at you and saying, no, thank you.
Let's tell everybody about your conference.
Yeah.
I want your website to light up when this
we gotta hit that target of ticket sales. We've still got a couple more months. So
like 5 more weeks left. So it's www.blackmassagetherapist.com. We try to make it easy.
Courses and the instructors, NCB approved credits to go with laws?
Yes. So you get 6 CE classes. So you're either going to choose between the Thai foot reflexology with Mr. Terrence Bonner, and his class is almost full, so I would say register soon. Or you have with Shanice Armstrong, you have a 4 hours ethics with a 2 hours business with Samuel B. Nelson. Shanice is an instructor in Atlanta as well. She owns her own massage clinic. And Samuel B. Nelson, he's out of Memphis, Tennessee, has a national chair massage business as well as a fitness business in Memphis. And he is killing the game, has contracts with Google, Cigna, all these major big companies. And so he can talk to you about business like no other.
That's lots of education.
I get some education. Lots of education. So you have between either choosing the 6-hour Thai foot reflexology class or the ethics and business class for 6 hours.
Nice.
So we're going to educate you. We're going to have some fun giveaways and raffle items. We have two dynamic speakers. We have our guest speaker that Benny Vaughn, he came on. He's going to do the welcome.
Nice. Good.
And I just talked about Benny earlier in the podcast. So he's coming on. He's so excited because he never thought he would see something like this in all of his years.
Nice.
And then we have Mr. Patrick Huey. He is a luxury spa director out in California, and he's been in the spa industry for many years and been spa director, and he could tell you about all these luxury spas and just opening up the industry to let you know what else is out there and the possibilities and the travel and all the great things, and not just going there day to day with your head down and just do a massage, but look at all the other possibilities of what this industry offers. So I try to get people from different walks of life to inspire and to also encourage the therapist that will be in the building.
Nice. That sounds like a good event.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, and then we're gonna dance and have some fun times at the end at dinner. So yeah. And headshots. You got to get headshots as well.
All of the networking stuff that happens. All the good. That's the community build. Like, the education is great. I love it. The credits that come with that is awesome. But it's also just that building of the community, that community vibe. You can't describe it. You can't put a dollar value on it. Right? It's worth every freaking moment.
Yeah.
And you want to be involved. Because this is the first time something like this is going down. Do you know what I mean? Like, you want to be there. I want you to be there. It's like, you know, it's like that person that could say, yep, that I was there when Jimi Hendrix performed for the first time. You know what I mean? Anyway, go out, support, buy a ticket to the show, and go learn some really cool stuff for some really cool people. Thanks for hanging out. This has been great.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me again.
You guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. Peace.